Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome again to the latest episode of Podnuts Pro. This is episode 84, and we have a torrid show for you tonight. Coming at you now with the triple M threat, Matt Rainey.
Hello all.
Martin Obando.
Hiya, guys.
And myself, Marvin B. And we are going to bring you, hopefully, some good conversation, some topics from our businesses over the last week. And let's go ahead and get started. Guys, how you doing?
It's been a slow week, which I like to have once in a while. And not that it's, I haven't had anything to do. It's just I haven't had too much to do. I have just the right amount to do, which allows me to stay busy for the day but not have 20 things happening at once. So that's pretty good.
Right. Yeah, those days are nice where you get done 5 o'clock. You're like, I'm done. That's it. I don't have any more to do.
Sorry, Marvin. I was going to say I have started to the point where I just stop. Even if I still have stuff to do, I'm starting to set a cutoff time and go spend some time with the wife. And I may come back and jump on the computer later, but trying to get that time where it just stops and family time.
Oh, I always have that. I mean, just to be clear, I usually cut it off anyway, 5:30. I'm usually, that's it. Unless I have to do a typical reboot of the server, you know, I'm not going to take on a project to do at night. That can wait till tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my week's been good. Same, kind of the same thing. I'm busy enough to keep me busy, but last night was kind of long. I ended up working late. The kids had band. My wife worked late, so I worked late. Usually those kind of nights I can squeeze in. Then I did some stuff last night downstairs, sitting there with the family. But overall, The week's been good. It started kind of slow and then picked up, and I now have 6 computers on order. I'm looking at ordering like 2 or 3 firewalls, and yeah, it's been a full week, and it's only Wednesday.
2 or 3 firewalls for one client or 3 different?
No, multiple, 3 different clients.
Oh. So my week was, you know, it was okay, but it's going to, I guess, the second half of this week into next week is going to be rapid pace. Got a couple of deployments to do, and I actually, Rainey, you can talk about this. This wasn't part of my planned questions, but I do have another question.
A surprise question.
A surprise question. So I have a customer that's got 8 locations, and we're going to be upgrading their firewalls. And for the first time, I actually talked with a rep from the company who told me that I should think about registering a deal so that I could get additional points off on my margin. And I normally don't really worry about that. As long as I get something and I can mark it up to the customer, I usually will do that. So she said, well, you can get 5 additional points. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll sign up. So I got onto the site. And first of all, I couldn't find the place where to do it. So I had to call them. They had to walk me through the thing. It took me like 10 minutes to fill out the form, because you have to put in the customer information, what you're doing, submit it. They come back and say, okay, it's approved. Then I forward that approval off to the rep. Then she calls me, and then she's like, okay, what SKUs are you going to use? And I just started thinking to myself, this is a lot of work that I have to do for 5, you know, measly margin points. And, I mean, it's a nice big sale. It's probably going to be about, you know, $8,000. Because of all the routers I'm doing. But I'm thinking, do you register deals at all with any of your products?
Well, I mean, for routers specifically, we're a WatchGuard Gold partner, so we get discounts built into every one we order already. And one of the reasons we did that was to get the discounts, since we do so many of them.
Well, I get discounts too, but she was like, you know, well, here's a bonus discount.
Yeah, there's different levels, and we got to hire the gold partner. And there, even once you're in this specific for WatchGuard, once you even get the gold partner, you have different levels depending on how much you sell. So there's different, you can get more back or more off each one if you sell X amount of dollars per quarter or per year. We don't go out of our, I'm not sure if I go through too much trouble to do it. The WatchGuard thing we do, because it is significant. We do order so many WatchGuard routers.
Yeah, well, I order a lot, and I thought it was just, I'll sign up and just get the discounts. But if I got to do that every single time and fill
out. Are these SonicWalls?
Yes, they are.
So, see, WatchGuard, we actually had to get certified. So I had to get watch guard certified. One of my guys got watch guard certified. We had to get two other people to get watch guard sales certified. It's more than that.
You have a commitment level, right?
Right.
So was this Dell wanting to you to do the points and stuff, Marvin?
Yes, and thank you, and I mean, you know, sorry Dell, but thank God Sonic Wall will be sold soon, and
it will.
Sonic Wall is being sold to another company.
The reason I asked is because I just had a conversation. So I bought two computers, and then I ordered three more, and they got canceled. So I ended up getting a hold of an inside sales rep to figure out why it was canceled. And during this time of really, I just want to order them. He's like, you know, you could save points, and you could sign up, and you can get pre-approved for points. And I'm like, points, points, points. That sounds really familiar, like the conversation I had last night with Dell. And I just said, no, I just want to order the parts. I'll go through a spurt where I'll order like six, like I did. And then I won't order anything for another, you know, 8 months, maybe. And then it's like, well, it just seems like the same thing. Like it was a lot of work to go through to not get very much return. And I'm like, at that point, I just don't care.
It's interesting because I mean, I get a decent margin. I don't know what it is, 20, 25%. So it's not like, you know, it's not like I don't have anything and I'm doing this to get margin. I get good margin. But I left, I didn't say I left them. I was a Dell Premier Solution, whatever they were, you know, 10 years ago. But I hated having to always, you know, go online, find your product, submit it to a rep and get it approved. And then, you know, it was too much. I just wanted to be able to go to a portal, see what's in stock. Here's the price. Customer, do you want this? Yes. No. Yes. I'll order it. Boom. It's done. I don't have to go through all that. But yeah, Dell makes it so hard to want to sell through them that it's, you know, 2 days to order routers because of a deal registration. I just want to be able to go onto a site, whatever my distributor is, pick out what's in stock, order it and ship it. And usually it's at my customer the next day or the day after.
I think if we were, you know, bigger companies, I think if we had more, you know, maybe a bigger spending, that'd be different. Then the work would justify it. But I think with, you know, we being just one or two people, I know Matt, you're kind of in a different situation. But I think we just don't have that, you know, the time to do all that doesn't justify the money that we would save and the little bit that we would ever purchase. You know, I mean, $8,000 is nothing to balk at, but that's eight versus, you know, when I worked for the ESD up here, we would order 5,000 computers at a time. They would come on pallets.
Right.
You know, that's a two completely different games right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think one day goes by we don't order equipment. We order a lot of equipment. Are you ordering stuff directly from Dell?
No, I actually don't. I order through,
through the distributor.
The bulk of my stuff is through, I have Tech Data, Synnex, and DNH.
Okay.
So I really don't like talking to people. That's why I like the fact that they've got these online portals, because you waste time talking to somebody, you know, when they're trying to understand what it is you want. You know, I already have the part numbers. I already know what I need. Just let me order it and get going. You know, time is money. They always want to sit and, oh, tell me about your business. No, I'm a computer. I'm a network support guy. You know what my business is.
I work on computers.
So anyway, didn't want to hijack the show, but I know that there's some stories that are waiting to be told. So. Who wants to go first?
And according to your introduction, this will be a torrid show, so I'm guessing the first door would be very hot and dry. Is that the definition we're going with?
Yeah, because it's better than hot and bothered.
It's too hot.
Of course, it could mean full of difficulty or tribulation.
What are you Googling? What are you on the dictionary over there?
I did. I looked up torrid. I thought torrid is an interesting description of the show.
Well, I was trying to think of, you know, fast and furious, but I didn't want to say that.
We're going to have a Fast and Furious show, and we're done. Thank you.
That wraps up the show.
And I didn't want, you know, I was on the cusp of saying, you know, we've got a, you know, jam-packed show, because I didn't want to, you know, sound like somebody else.
We'll do a jelly-packed show, or a
preserved-packed? our show is preserved?
Full of preservatives.
Full of preservatives. All right. Well, I have one. So I got a call yesterday from a friend of mine, his son goes to college here locally at, not locally, but one of the big state colleges here in the state of Oregon. And he called me up and he said that they were having some wireless issues and wanted to know if I could just sit down with him on the phone. Maybe he can talk out what the problem is and maybe we can come up with a solution or even hire me to come down and fix it. Okay. Sat down with him today, got a call from him, and he said, so what's happening is this. They have, it's not really, I guess it is a frat house, but it's not like, you know, a crazy wild house, but anyways, so they have a house, one house, they have 7 access points. And so I talked with him about the access points, what kind of access points and stuff like that. And he, so come to find out they're Ubiquiti access points. So, okay. So then I said, and I'm going to confirm that you have a controller, you know, the software. And he says, yes, we have all that hooked up. And so, you know, he was getting to where he was understanding kind of what I was asking him because I had worked with him before in the past and he didn't really know. So I didn't know his level, his next level of computer skills. So he says he has 7 of them. Some of them work, some of them don't. Some of them are just dead. And I think what he means by dead is that they're just, there's no connections to them or they're not working right. They're flashing funny. They have the circles, the blue and the green circle around them. And I said, okay, so the majority of the problem is this. Last year, everything worked fine. They went away for the summer. They came back. If you came to the school early enough in the summer, everything was fine. No problem. There's about, what did he say? About 38 people in this house. So now you take that and you times that by, phones, laptops, PlayStations, Xbox Ones, right? So what's happening is all of that goes back to a switch. They don't know what switch. They can't find the switch. He says it's a bundle of wires. I'm like, okay. He did confirm that the Ubiquiti routers were PoE. They have the little injector boxes. It's like, okay, great. So at least we know they're not, like, there's not a PoE switch that I'd be looking for. And then from that switch, wherever that switch is, it goes into a Cisco Linksys E3000. And I went, ding, 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 ding. There's your problem. So what it sounds like is everybody is just tapping out this router. This router just can't handle the traffic. They said, we're thinking that not everybody's getting an IP address. So their lease is 3 or 4 days. So I said, what happens if you unplug the router? This is the little Linksys router. Plug it back in. He says, everything works fine. And then it just drops again. He says, when people leave, everything works fine. So there.
If there's no one there to get on Wi-Fi, does the Wi-Fi actually work?
Right. So I'm going to be. So my question to you then, since I am. I like WatchGuard. No offense, Marvin. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But with this, with 38 people, 3 to 5 devices apiece.
Ruckus.
Well, and they have the Ubiquiti routers, the Ubiquiti access points.
So I'll get rid of them.
Well, I mean, they work. I don't think it's the access.
Some are dead.
Well, I think by dead he just means that they just can't make a connection. Like there's just, but
they're dead, Jim.
Yeah. So without being on site, I know that he needs a new router. Right. This router's firewall is just dying. It's just not keeping up with it.
So you want a router, but not the wireless access points.
No, he's going to keep the access points.
Right. So you just want a new router.
Right. I just want a new router.
So you're not going to do any kind of UTM, Unified Threat Management, just straight connections going out, nothing, no proxies.
I would assume none of that stuff.
So any business class router should be fine, right?
Right.
But WatchGuard M200.
So that was my question, was what would you recommend for, you know, because I threw him out and I said, well, this may be, you know, $500-$600 for a router. And he goes, that's fine, thinking that I was going to be trying to pull teeth, but I know the 200
is quick. Wait, I'm sorry. Did I say $500 or $600? I meant $800 or $900.
I was going to say, okay, it's 38 people, 5 devices each, right?
Right.
So you're talking 150. I mean, either one, that should be fine. I mean, so your 200 is going to be too low, isn't it?
If they're just doing no proxies, you might want to go with an M300, but they're not all going to be online at the same time.
Right.
Maybe M200, M300, whatever is his budget. If he's fine with 500 or 600, maybe he's fine with a little bit more, just to be sure.
Right. But, I mean, you look at, you know, so 100, so you take your 38 people with 5 devices, right? That's 190 access, that's 190 IPs. Even on a Class C, that's only going to leave you 68, 60-some.
Yeah, don't go Class C.
Well,
no.
So they're going to need to get the whole network's going to need to get rerouted, or the subnet's going to have to change on the whole network. Because, I mean, they're just doing probably just a /24.
Yeah, which shouldn't be a big deal. The routers you were doing DHCP, the access points, you just reboot them and get a new IP.
Right. So I could switch them over to a /23. That's going to give them another range of IPs. And
now, this house that you're talking about, though, is this a gaming house?
Never seen it.
A streaming house?
Yes, and I would assume gaming. I would assume streaming, because you have people. College students.
I think you go one level up. Like if I were in my Sonic Wall language, we would have been talking a T3 or 400. I would have put them up to maybe a 500. So what's the equivalent for WatchGuard?
Okay, so the X team. You know what the X team 330s are, right?
Yeah, but the 330s I would put as a that'd be like a TZ400 for Sonic Wall, I think.
How many levels is that below the one you're talking about? Because the 330 has been retired. The M200 is a replacement for the XTM330.
Because we have the XTM26 is what I have at the school, and that has 100 plus people on it.
Actually, wait, that could be an NSA level, right?
Which one, the M200?
You know, you were saying the 330?
The 330 has been retired. Well, it's his legacy now. And the direct replacement for the 330 is the M200. So one step up would be the M300.
Okay, so the M... Okay, so that's probably like an NSA 240. So, yeah, that's fine.
But, I mean, so those 300s, so the M300s, I'm looking at one site and it says starts at 1500. They're not going to spend $1,500 on a firewall router.
You don't know that. We can't assume that.
Yeah, you just ask. You never know unless you ask.
Right.
Give them the good, better, best. Start them out with that. And then drop down to, a T50?
Well, I mean, an M200 is going to be in the $600 range, I think, right?
Well, okay. So maybe I'm looking at a site that's completely different. Maybe that's why. Because the M200 I'm seeing is at one site, it starts at 1082.
Oh, yeah, it'll be a little bit more.
But that's fully loaded, though, right?
Yeah, that might have, like, the whole UTM package and...
Yeah, you just need it without... You don't need the services.
You just need live security. It's going to come with live security. You can just get the basic one-year live security without all that unified threat management.
No, that's one-year standard support.
With no UTM on it?
With no UTM, 1082. Now, that's just one site. I don't know if this is I purchased mine through you last time, so we should talk after the show and come up with some prices.
I mean, maybe the T50.
That's what I was saying. I think that's probably a better match for them. That's going to get you closer to the that'll be an $800 range.
Yeah, I mean it's not as powerful. I can tell you that it's less powerful than the M200. Throughput's a lot less.
I mean, they're using a Linksys.
They're trying to use a Linksys.
Right, they're trying to use a Linksys, and it's just, yeah. So, anyways, there's, yeah.
Yeah, so that's one thing I never throw a price out in the air. They're going to grab onto that. They're going to grab onto that like nothing.
Right, and I said this may be something, and so, I can always, I can go back, and that's not a... He's not holding it to me. He's asking about some prices, and I said, well, it could be around this, it could be that, I don't know. So,
yeah, when you get out there, you just say, okay, well, now I've got a better idea. Now I can get you a real quote.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I told him I'd give him a call tonight.
And that's the cabling, I mean, all the access points are hardwired.
Right. Everything is, goes back to a central closet.
We don't know what the condition of those cables are either.
Right. You need a site survey.
Right. It's a two-hour drive one way to get there.
So $1,000 for the site survey?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of college students calling me up saying, "Hey, can you fix it so we can play things faster?"
Yeah, but yeah, there's got to be a site. I would just do a flat site survey charge as well, whatever you want that to be. It's got to be something, because you don't want to go out there and spend all your time driving and looking at it and give them a quote and say, "Oh, never mind."
Yeah,
it's got to be a site survey charge.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's what's coming up. I have then a couple other moves. I've got a client who has a Sonic Wall. And we're going to be moving them over to a new location. And then I've got still the, still that coffee shop from early on, a couple of episodes ago that we're talking about.
Did you, end up figuring out your quad SSID dilemma?
No, I've been just hammered and I haven't had a chance to, I mean, it's still way off a bit. But that's kind of my to-do this weekend, is to really sit down, look at my notes again, and try to wrap my brain around all that.
You know, I was thinking, do you have one SSID there that's going to be used throughout the shop, regardless of location?
Well, I'll have a couple that'll be used throughout the shop. So one of the options would be the point of sale system and the employee system on two different networks, is just merge those together, and then that would resolve. That'll give me enough of my access points then, or my SSIDs.
Because you could use the same SSID across multiple accounts if you're going to separate them, and then you know you have one access point with two SSIDs, one with three SSIDs.
Right.
All of them have the one that has to be used throughout the shop, and then you know the back office area would have an SSID just broadcasting for that area.
Right, that was the thought. Yeah, but then the problem, the big problem is that when it goes to the point of sale system, because there needs to be a physical line for the point of sale system.
Right, you're going to bridge that one.
I was going to bridge that one, so maybe I'll just make that one and the back offices the same, and then that does that, because then I still am going to need the conference room on a separate one and the guest on a separate one.
Yeah, this is open mesh access point you're using?
Yeah.
And I know have a you question about those.
Four.
Yeah. Off topic. How does open mesh handle the handoffs if you're roaming between access points? Is that something you have to set up manually, the handoffs, or is that all set for you?
It's all set for you. It's pretty seamless.
Yeah.
Do you know what the threshold for handoffs is that they have set by default?
I don't think they have an advertised threshold, but I don't think I've had anybody complain about it. Worst case scenario, I think there, may be a little blip while you're, switching from one to the other. But it's not a huge drop and you've got to reconnect or anything like that.
Yeah.
So you haven't had the issue of where when someone attaches to one, they want to hold on to it forever. As long as it's in range, it does do a handoff.
Yes.
Yes.
At least in my experience. And I can speak so the school that I have open mesh, we have open mesh devices at both ends and in the middle. And one person will go from one end to the other, and it'll just hop to them.
And you can log into a controller and verify that they're actually moving access points?
I don't think that I can follow them that closely, because I'd have to look.
Yeah, I'd have to be fast.
Right. Because in open mesh, I can't see who's on. I can see a number of clients. And so I don't know if it would be fast enough if that product would, or the back end would be fast enough to shift account, like, oh, I see 35 here, I see 36 there, I see 35 again,
well, I
see 36.
I'm not saying that they're going to run back and forth, but I'm saying if they're on one side of the building, you can see maybe by MAC address, they're on this access point. And if they walk across the building, is there a console view that now shows this MAC address on this access point?
There is. I mean, yeah, you can. But it's like a historical view, so whoever, they attach to the first access point and then they go across and attach to maybe three others, there will be in the console. Actually, you know what? It wouldn't, because it would only track their last location.
So there's no live view of who's connected to what access point?
Well, it is live, but you're not going to see, like, if somebody moves from one access point to the other, it's not going to retain the history from the first access point. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I don't need a history. I mean, if I look at it live, if I say this MAC address is on access point one, and I want to test if he walks across the hall or across the building, I know he'll drop off of that one, but now I should see his MAC address on another access point.
Well, here's how I've worked around that. I take my Fluke, and I have a roaming feature on the Fluke that'll tell me which access point I'm connected to. So that's how I've done it. I don't know that you can actually do that in the console. In a live...
Well, so what you can do in the console, and I'm looking at it, is I can see a MAC address. So this is, whatever, second grade 11, which is a iOS device. I can see that it was seen 28 minutes ago on the second grade access point. And then I can go down and I can see, maybe this, whatever this was, this is an Android device. I can see it's attached to the fourth grade access point. And it was last seen 2 hours ago. But I don't know, there's nothing... I've never seen this like revolve so fast. Honestly, I've also never tried. I mean, I guess I could put in one MAC address, just search for that one MAC address, and then watch it go across and see if it would be live to that. But
you're going to have to refresh it though.
I'm going to have to refresh it.
Yeah, you're going to have to do a manual refresh, and you're going to have to leave the device. The problem is on the device, you won't know that you've switched.
Right.
Until you come to the console refresh and see it. So I guess you could take your tablet in one hand and maybe a phone or something in the other hand and walk and refresh and look and refresh and look.
Yeah. Well, in this case, we had somebody who was having trouble with some handoffs, and we were just logged in remotely to the console to look at the access point to see who's connected. So we were there remotely. We said, okay, now we identified his device, saw which access point he was on, because there's a view of to show what active sessions there are. He had to go walk down the hall, because it's a very long building, and we could see it drop off of this one, and we could see it pick up on the next one. But there was kind of a live view of what the active sessions were. And I haven't used Open Mesh. I'm not sure if there's a similar view.
I think there is, but it's not as granular as what I think you're looking for.
We're using Ingenious access points, but the handoff is not configured for you. You just got to go in there and configure the handoff.
No, and these ones always know where everybody is, because the whole point of the Open Mesh is that if for some reason the physical connection on one of them drops, it's going to know where its closest neighbor is and then start routing traffic through that. So it falls back to this mesh network.
Okay, interesting. I'd like to try them. I'm just curious how they would be different from the Ingenious.
Yeah, they're nice, but it's, I mean, because, yeah, once that device switches to the next access point, when you go back into the console and you hit refresh and it says that last seen location, you're only going to see it on the access point that it's connected to. So I've never actually gone that route. Like I said, on my Fluke, I actually just, you know, on the Fluke, you can actually see, you know, it'll tell you once you switch from one access point to the other, to a third, to a fourth. I mean, kind of like a
I do like the view of being able to see who's got an active connection to which access point, though.
You can do that on the Fluke as well.
Right. Built into the device, though.
Yeah.
Maybe Fluke will come up with an access point.
We can ask.
I mean, granted, it'll cost you $20,000 for one, but other than that, that's the...
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, hey, if you want it, they'll build it.
Well, who would test the Fluke access point to make sure it's working right?
That's a $30,000 part.
I think they, you buy another device.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yeah, I mean, but in terms of Open Mesh, Matt, I mean, I like them. I use Open Mesh as my starter access point. And then for customers that need a more robust network, and they've got to have that, you know, high demand, high density traffic, I go to Ruckus. But Open Mesh is my, I've got, I don't know, 30 out in the field now.
Yeah. I have not used Ruckus. I have some clients who have a Ruckus device, but they're controlled by CenturyLink. They're not controlled by me. So whenever something goes down, I have to tell them to call their ISP.
Yeah, that's the thing. Windstream is starting to do that as well. I think all the ISPs are trying to go in and, you know, sell Ruckus as part of their package so they can give you phones, internet, and Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. And so when I went and I said, well, we can pull this Ruckus point out, we can pull the power, you know, the PoE adapter out, they said, nah, let's just leave it. So, because we were going to do Open Mesh. It's just a small community room, and which is what I just purchased some Open Mesh devices today that'll be coming in for a deployment next week.
All righty. Well, sorry to ask about that.
No, that's what we're here for.
Hold everything.
You have a question. Somebody else also has that same question.
That's why we're here, Matt. Even for you. You know?
I can guarantee I come up with a unique question that no one else would care about. That's my goal now. Find a question that no one else in the world would care about. And we'll spend 20 minutes on it.
Have you met everyone else in the world?
That's right. Wait, so you're expecting us to care about it?
Right. You have to care about it to answer the question.
Let's see. I don't know if I'm going to be good with that. I may not care.
All right.
I think Marvin had something for us too.
I did have a question. So
I'm going to pretend to care.
All right. Well, let me go to question number two then. my Matt cares question. So I had to do my first purchase of Office 2016 for a standalone station. And I have still been purchasing, don't laugh, 2010 and 2013 standalone licenses for some of my customers because their line of business application does not support anything higher. So I went to my distributor, bought the license, instant download, and went to go register everything. And, you know, the distributor asked for the end user information, but I've never put that in. I always put my company stuff in because a lot of times I'll order stuff and not know who it's going to. So I don't want it going to somewhere where they may not use it. So I get the license, and now they have a little activation portal that when the distributor sends the license, you have to go online, activate it. I go on, sign in. All of a sudden, I'm starting to do the installation, and they're asking for a Microsoft account. I can't install it without one. So even though I don't know who the end user is going to be, I know the customer. So my question is, how are you guys handling those one-off purchases of Office 2016 where it's a license that you've got to tie to a Microsoft account?
Okay, so what I do for that is if it's for a business, I have them create a Microsoft account tied to either the owner's email address, or if they've got an Exchange server, I'll create software at their domain name and use that to manage their licenses. And that's what we'll use for the Microsoft account. And then we'll just document the Microsoft account, and the next time we have to install, we'll use the same one again. If it's for an individual, same thing. I send them a link to the, I think it's live, signup.live.com. Tell them you need to create a Microsoft account, email me what you've used, and I will install it for you. That's pretty much what we do.
Now, you're doing that with the license and with the, because you can buy the PC cards. Is the PC cards, do they still require an account as well?
Yes they do.
I have, so I have a client who has probably 15 Office 2016 accounts. Or not accounts, but cards. And I always buy the card because the download always seems to be attached to whoever you, when you downloaded it. I always purchase the card for a couple of reasons. One, so let me back up. I do the same thing. I create a account, a Microsoft account, just for Office registration and downloading, just for basically license management for Office 2016. I then didn't have that in my documents. And then what I do
with the user's email address,
with just a maybe the business at outlook.com, just a generic email account just for Office registration. That's all it's used for, and I document that.
So you create each one per client, or one per office, or one per business.
One per, basically per client. So like Dalton Management is one of my property management companies. They have sites all over the place, including Southern Oregon, where I'm flying to on Friday. So what I do is I've created them an account, an Outlook account, dalton@outlook.com. Okay.
But they have a domain name or something, right?
They do have a domain name, but I created them an account for just this. I guess I could have used their domain name too, but this was before they were still on POP when I started some of this stuff. So we just went that route. Then I always get the card. And when I buy the card, this one's not even opened. I'm holding one in my hand. When I buy it and then I register it to the business, even though it's going to go on a site, right? It's registered to the business. I will date the card. Okay. And the reason is that when you go back in there and you need to reload your computer and you need to re-download the Office, you don't put the key and you go in there and you look and it just says the date and what the version is.
Right.
So
it's for one PC installed on October 19th.
Right. Right. So the problem is that you go, oh, when was this computer? When was this purchased? When was it? You know what I mean? So if I have a computer that was purchased in July, or an Office that was purchased in July, but yet I bought 5 copies of Office in July, which one is to theirs? Yeah. So I've started dating the card, and the card then stays with all the computer information on site.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter which one you pick. I've done that. I've had to go back and reinstall it 2 years ago, and I'm like, oh, geez. I just go pick one.
Well,
and
I've never had a problem. I'm always afraid what's going to happen is it's going to say, this site we have here, you're no longer valid and you're valid. And I've never ran into that. But originally, when I first started this process, I needed an Outlook account. I didn't have one. So I used my original Hotmail account,
Ooh.
So because I didn't realize that it was all registered. So all of a sudden, early on, I had like 4 or 5 licenses that were in my name on my account, even though they belonged to my customers.
And if they want to reinstall, they've got to log in with your
account. Exactly. And so I had to move some stuff around because that was like, oh, great. Now I've just totally locked my clients in. But yeah.
That's good client retention policies.
Yeah, it is. By the way, I own that account. So yes, Marvin, it is a pain. I always get the disc because, or the CD or the card, because that way I've got something to hand them. And then I always take the installer file and I will put it in the root of C under a folder called installs. And then that gets backed up as well. So I always take that little 5 meg, 4 meg, 4.5 meg installer file and throw it on the local machine as well. But yes, to answer your question, this is a giant pain and Microsoft is doing this.
Oh, I may just tell all my customers to get volume licensing.
Okay, so that's one thing. So I don't know if you've noticed, Martin, but if you get, let's say, I don't know what the number is, 10, 12, 15 activations on a single Microsoft account, it'll start not activating.
Oh.
And the first time it happened, I don't know what the number was. I said it was somewhere between 10 and 15. I would go to install it. And this is a new key. I'm not going to the site and saying to reinstall it. I've got a new license. I put in a Microsoft account. I put in all the stuff and it won't activate. I have to call and activate it. That's strange. The next time for this client, it does it again. Like, well, that's ridiculous. So I created I think they're using software at domain name. I created software too at domain name. And now they all load and activated until I got around 10 or 15. And then they started not activating again. So those kind of things, if you pile on too many from what I've seen, and maybe they fix it because I stopped doing it that way, and I'll tell you why in a second, it'll stop activating. Now, you can do it by phone, but it won't activate online. Now, if you find yourself putting in that many Office licenses on one Microsoft account, they should be using volume licensing instead, because if they have that many licenses, move them over to volume. That's what we did. For this one client, we just moved them all to open license or volume license, and that's what they use now. For anybody I think is going to get above 10, we'll just start them off on that.
Okay. And I'm right about 10. So, and they're not really expanding. It's a property management company. So, you know, this is just an upgrade. I'm upgrading a dual Core 2 Duo with Office. They actually have 13, but they wanted to go move it up to 16 to an i5 to 2016 on Friday. So.
Now, Marvin, until recently you said you were purchasing Office 2010. How were you purchasing that?
Well, I had one of those gray market sites that...
Sorry for the chuckle.
Yeah, that were still actually getting legitimate keys. Now, I haven't done 2010 as much. I think I did... My last one was probably around February of this year, but 2013 is what I've been doing. And 2013 was actually fine until October 14th when they stopped selling them through distribution. And you can only get the 2016. So that's the whole reason I ended up doing this.
Even 2013 needed the Microsoft account to install.
The 2013, I could, you could tell it not to use an account and it would install and work. The Office 2013 Home and Business.
Oh, I sell it all the time, and I've never seen it not need a Microsoft account.
Nope, I've been bypassing it.
Your grayware software.
No, that was legit. 2010, illegit.
It was. It just didn't need activation.
That's right. If you can't read the language that is on the activation, you don't have to activate it.
That's right. I get a lot of Spanish, you know, installations down here. You know, I live in north of Cuba, so.
There's a huge Korean population up here in Portland. They all want the Korean version that they just download from their neighbors.
I had to connect to a girl. She was in Mexico, and she wanted me help needed help installing some software. I said, okay. And I connected, and everything's in Spanish. Now, I took Spanish in high school a few years ago.
That's conversational Spanish. That's not Microsoft Spanish.
But look, she said, I'm installing software. She goes, oh, you speak Spanish? I said, no, why? She goes, you're clicking everything. I said, I know where the buttons are.
That's right. Yep.
It's Office. I've installed it 1,000 times or whatever it was. I said, I can know where yes and no is. I know where yes and no is, but I know where all the buttons are.
So the Office that comes with – I purchased a computer the other day, and the Office that came on it, which I wanted to remove and install their license copy, was both in English, French, and Spanish. And you had to uninstall each one of them, each version.
Did it hang for you?
It hung for a long time.
I got a fix for that.
Well, I just turned it off. I turned it back on and it was gone. I'm like, okay, that must have been the fix. But it's the same thing. I'm like, what's French for continue or French for, and I'm like, click. Oh, I guess wrong.
Go back.
Okay, so I've had, so yeah, I'm going to tell you, when you get that and you see those three, I have never once been able to uninstall it successfully without it hanging forever and taking forever. So there is a Office 365 uninstall tool.
Oh, yes. I was going to mention that. I got that.
So you run, and whenever I boot a computer up and see that, I run that uninstaller, and they're gone. It's so much quicker than trying to uninstall each language, because for me, it's never worked. Small little cab file that you download from Microsoft, and you can just get rid of all of it. Nice and easy.
Oh, there it is, the uninstall tool.
Yeah. Sweet. And it's pretty quick.
Yeah. It's a lot quicker than trying to read different languages. And then for me, it's always hung up, and I had to power the computer off, try it again. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's going in the notes for tonight's show.
Now, okay, so I still have to install 2010 Office for Clients because they have software that does not work with 2013 or 2016.
And how are you doing it?
So we do volume licensing because you get rights to 2010.
There you go. Yep. Well, I do that for most of them when I have to do terminal servers or anything like that, because you got to do volume licensing anyway. And a customer actually called me and said, how come when we get the new servers, it costs twice as much as when we get the computers?
They want Office licenses on terminal server?
Yes.
Okay, so what with volume license, you have the right to load it on terminal server without buying
license. Which I do,
license.
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So you buy, you have five users, you can buy five volume license Office, load it on terminal server, and load it on five computers, and you're good to go. Just for people who don't know that.
Well, we don't do that because the terminal server is for a branch office where they don't have on-site local computers. So we keep those separate so that Microsoft, if they ever knock on our door. So I've been through one of those audits. They suck.
We had to do one, but it was an online. Okay, so there are companies that call offering you to do an audit, right?
No, I just hang up on those.
Right. So, and we get a lot of clients saying, oh, I think I have to do this. No, that's just somebody offering to help you. Because when they realize you got to buy 40 licenses, they want to sell them to you because they want to sell. It's a salesperson. This is not an official Microsoft audit. This is a third party trying to find a way to make some money. Very nice of them to offer to get you into compliance. Right. Just like those nice people who want to transfer your domain to their service.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So did we answer your question? It seemed like we really cared about that one, too.
Well, see, I knew I had to go to question two.
I don't know if we answered it just as much as said, yeah, that sucks.
Well, the only other option is, you know, of course, the big push to Office 365. You know, just put everybody on Office 365 on the E3 and you get the software and your mailbox, you know, $12.95 a month or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you'll never be out of date.
As long as you pay.
Yeah. But I have some clients who have both ways, who will buy this one. And then have other ones that are like, nope, we're just going to just up our one from E1 to E3, and then we'll just download and we'll just go that route. Okay.
I still have customers that we're getting off because they purchase Office 365 Home and put it on five business machines.
Yeah, I've got one client who I said, well, there's that option, or there's, because they're just two machines. And they said, no, they were talking about that. And I said, no, we need to go and purchase that. So I have two more licenses, two more boxes coming in. So, but I am moving one of my clients from Windows XP to Windows 7 this week or next week.
They're moving up. They're moving up to only how many operating systems back?
They're like, our computers aren't working very well anymore. Yeah, it's been a long time. I keep saying we need to do this. So,
they've got to 2020. So,
right. Well, and the reason they're going with 7 as opposed to 10 is because the application that they need doesn't support. They are going to 10. Sorry, they're getting two 10 computers. I've got three computers coming that are 7, and it's because their graphics computer, their graphics program that they use, it's a franchise. Their graphics program will not support 10 yet. They just started supporting 7. So we're moving there.
Just now started supporting 7?
And they're it's some 10,000, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 for them to do this software upgrade on their server. And that's why they haven't done it, is because they have two computers running Windows XP, and the other one is 7, but it runs really bad, and so they need to make them all 7 so it can make it run better, and it won't support 10. So that's one of my moves coming up. The office is physically moving locations.
Now, did you have a question number one, or you don't want to ask us that anymore?
Well, my question number one was kind of a rhetorical question, I would say. Mm-hmm. So I got a call, and most calls, my gatekeeper does a pretty good job of, you know, weeding out you know, the sales calls and all of that. But I got a call, and he got past her because he talked about doing updates of third-party applications. And she knows that, you know, whenever it comes to stuff like that, she just, you know, because I'm dealing with so many, you know, Logic Now and Ruckus, and she never knows exactly, so she let him through. And it's a guy claiming to be from a site called Secure Updater that will be able to make us an extra $40 per machine or per ticket whenever we're doing work, because we can sell our customers a subscription to automatically update their third-party applications, like, you know, Flash, you know, Dropbox, all of those things. And I just said to him, I said, well, I have Nanite for that. He goes, oh, but this is better. I said, well, I have my RMM tool that also does those updates. And so it was just interesting. And I thought, you know, how many companies are trying to, because you got Nanite, you got Patch My PC, you've got all these others that are now coming out of the woodwork to, you know, to offer you a service to help keep your customers updated. Now, Matt, I know you and I both use Max Focus, and we can do the third-party patching, even though. Oh, and Martin, you do too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sometimes they don't always work, so I will still use the Nanite to go in and do that, which is the reason I keep that. But it's so cheap that, you know, if I wanted to do a markup, I could. So I just asked this guy, I said, why would I pay you to do what I can already do? And he kind of was like, because we could help your revenue stream. And he, you know, he was just...
The same sales rhetoric.
Yeah. So I was just wondering, that have you guys started running into that where, you know, I know that we've all talked about Nanite, we've all talked about our RMM tools, but are you guys doing anything else with the third-party patching, especially for customers like, you know, if they don't want Java anymore because of... you know, secure internet concerns and stuff like that.
No, why not? I'm using that Max Focus only for those who want the patch management.
Yeah, same here. I include the patch management as part of that cost for that monitoring. So if I do jump on a computer and I see that it needs some, you know, if I'm here and there jumping on a computer, I'll run like Patch My PC or something like that, just because it's so quick and I already have it in my tools. But I don't have a third party other than just the GFI or the Logic Now, Max Focus, whatever it's called, to be doing patch management.
I thought it was odd because, yeah, I mean, I'll do that as well. I, you know, it's part of my Logic Now stuff. And then when I'm on a computer, if I've, you know, most of my offices, I've got a server on site or a admin station. So I run Nanite from the admin station and I can update all the computers at once across the domain. So, you know, and then I'll just charge them, you know, a flat fee for installing, you know, 800 computer updates that day or whatever. I mean, they don't know. I don't touch every single machine.
Now, on Secure Updater, I'm on their site. I think it has like 35 programs that they said they can update.
Yeah, it's basically a Nanite. It's all the same software where it's your, you know, Adobe stuff, your Flash stuff, your Reader, your Adobe Air, PDF Creator, Foxit Reader.
I mean, most of the stuff my clients don't run. Defragler, Audacity, FUBAR 2000, Inkscape, Win, you know, CCleaner, GIMP, LibreOffice,
right?
Foxit Reader, Speccy. My clients don't run that stuff.
What about Notepad Plus?
What's that?
What about Notepad Plus?
They all run that, of course.
Okay, well, I'm just checking. Hey, that's a good program. So I was just curious.
Pigeon? What is Pigeon? The software is called Pigeon.
Instant messaging app.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of these third-party things my clients don't run, so I'm not sure the value of telling them if you ran these, we could keep them updated. So here, go install all this, and I'll keep it updated for you.
I just do it from Max Focus, and it's all the same software. Like I said, with Nanite, I mean the stuff that my customers would use, you know, is part of that, and the one-offs would be FileZilla. I've got an office that does Skype, so I can update all their Skypes through the Nanite. Even somebody where they need a, you know, video player, VLC, you know, you just do one-offs if you want to.
Yeah, Nanite says they support 113 programs. Of course, some of that is Microsoft stuff, as all the .NETs.
Right. Which has come in handy. I love the .NET stuff that they do. I had a law firm where we had 140 workstations, and they had to have a .NET update, and it was beautiful to push that out through Nanite.
So Max Focus doesn't do .NET updates?
Back then I didn't have it, but okay. I don't know if I could do the Nanite I could actually force right then, right there. The Max Focus, I think, is part of the regular updates, so I'd have to, schedule them, let them run, or...
Yeah, we have a client that he called and said that they're one of the main software vendors said they have to update the .NET 4.6.1 or on all the computers. So I might need to check on that. I'll have to see if Max Focus can do it. If not, maybe I'll, how much is that 9.8 Pro? Do you know offhand?
Well, the one I pay for, it's up to 500 machines for $95 a month.
Yeah. So they have different tiers.
Yeah, they have tiers.
There we go.
And the numbers aren't static, so it's 500 machines in the month. So if you don't touch a machine in 2 months, it doesn't get counted. So it kind of starts over every month up to 500 ish.
So one, I'm looking at right now, Mike, 1 to 100 machines is $20 a month. 101 to 250 is $50 a month. 251 to 500, $95 a month. 501 to 1,000, $185 a month. So
yeah, that price is well worth it because the amount of time that you're going to save, being able to do that. Like I said, that .NET install for 140 machines, we calculated the cost of their junior tech running from machine to machine to do it. And I told them, I said, I can have that done.
For half that price.
For half, yeah. And they're like, how can you do that? Just that's what you pay me for.
What you do is you show up there about 5 o'clock and leave. Okay, I'm here. I'll be done before you get back in the morning, and you just go home and sleep, and then be there for 7 before you show up and say, I've been here all night long. Here's your bill.
You could do that.
You could do that, and they would say, "Boy, that Marvin, he's such a good. He was here all night getting his supper running.
That was such dedication.
Dedication."
But yeah, Nanite, I mean, as a backup, Matt, I love it because you don't have to worry about even deploying the Max Focus clients. If you go to a site, that they're a one-off customer and you're helping somebody, I keep it on my USB drives and just stick it in. As long as you're on a domain station with admin credentials, you just run it from your USB drive.
So or a computer, or it pushes out to all the computers?
It pushes out to all the computers that show up on the domain. It has a domain discovery, and you can either just let it select all, or I've got a customer that I've got 5 locations that I log into an admin machine here in Fort Lauderdale, and I can update their Tampa, Orlando, Miami, and Palm Beach offices through the network.
This is something I'll have to look into. I know that you talk about it. I know a lot of people in the Podnest community talk about 9.8 Pro, and it's something that I've never used. I've used 9.8, but I've never done the pro version for the automated installation and upgrade.
Yeah, I wonder. So you don't have a computer with 9.8 installed along with the patch management for Max Focus? They don't conflict, do they? Or do you not use patch management if you have this on the computers?
No, I don't use it that way. I know that there are guys, and I've actually had one offer to talk to me about, you can actually script it in Max Focus so that it can run at a scheduled time and do the updates for you completely automated. I don't do it that way. I keep it separate, but they don't conflict. You can use them in tandem with the Max Focus tool.
Okay. Interesting. So one more question. You have 9.8 Pro installed on a server. You can log in the server and just push the updates. Click.
Server or an admin station. It doesn't have to be a server. Just anywhere where you've got domain admin rights.
And that machine, I know, really dumb question here, but the machine is, that server is one, but then everything else is also incrementally counted, right? You're not just, it's not just the server is not the one machine that the license goes against or the...
No, it's based on the number of machines that it's updating.
Okay. Because the problem I run into is not all my clients would want something like this, so I would be flexible, and then I have to figure out who to resell it to, who to not resell it to, and so I would be teetering between that 250 to 251, and then sometimes maybe I don't want to eat the cost myself when I'm not going to install it on anything.
Well, here's what they do. It's not a thing where they, you're cut off at 250. You might be 255 one month. You might be 180 the next month. You might be 100 one month. So just buy the plan where you know you're going to kind of be in the most, And if for some reason you know that you're starting to go over every month, if you're at, 270, 3 months in a row, that would be the time to jump up. But I mean, I've been at the 500 mark forever. I know I've got more than 1,000 stations out there, but I don't update every office every month. So my number stays in that 400 to 500 range each month, depending on what client I'm updating. Okay. So that's how they do it. It's a rolling count. So,
but the hard limits aren't. So like you said, if I'm at 250 and I play the 250 in 1 month, I go to 260, but then the rest of the months I'm down below 250.
Yeah, they're not gonna come after you and say, oh, you owe us for those 60.
which I understand if they would, because I know there's some things that say, okay, if you reach this certain limit, that's a hard limit, and you to go to the next plan, you have to purchase into the next plan, and right. Then you can manually go up, run it, and then turn around and manually go down, and then you get potentially credited the offset, and then it becomes a big, then my accountant is like, what is this you purchased, and then they credit it back to you, and it makes it dirty.
I have loved the way they have done this. It's always been a rolling count. And as far as I know, they're always going to keep it that way, because again, you might update, one office just for a special project, and your regular static customers are never going to be above 250. So, I don't know how high you could go before it triggers something. But like I said, I've paid the $95 a month just because I know that I'm going to be in that range, but I think I've only gone over the 500 once or twice, and they've never charged me.
I think I'll sign up for the micro and load it everywhere.
Get back to us. Let us know.
I signed up for the micro and I sold it on 2,000 computers.
Right. I talked to a gentleman by the name of Marvin B. who said that you guys were going to come after me.
He told me that y'all weren't really going to come at me for overages. So in my dashboard on workstations, I have like over 1,300 workstations in my dashboard.
Yeah, you're going to need to go with the $185 plan there.
So it looks like you're looking at, if you cap out on the micro, it's $1 to $120 a month. It's 20 cents per computer at the high end of the computer. So small is $101 to $250, $50 a month. If you're at 250 machines, you're about 20 cents or 20 cents per computer. So if you charge $1 a month for patch management, you're paying 20 cents a month and you're making 80 cents per computer if you charge $1 a month. And if you're at the higher end of that computer too, if you're at like 125, of course, let's see, it's 40 cents. So you're still making money as long as you charge $1 or $2 a month per computer.
But you know how I bill them? I still bill them based on time. And the way I do it, I actually do it. I'll bill them a 0.1 for each computer plus a 0.5 for the download time. So, for instance, I just did a client Monday, and it was that in all of their offices, it was 141 stations. So it was between five offices. So basically, actually, I kind of did it different for them. I forget how I do it, but I charge them so that it comes out as a amount of time. So like it was, for instance, I'll say 14 stations, I bill them a 0.1. So it's 1.4 hours plus 5 plus a 0.5 for downloads. So 1.9 hours is what I bill them for doing the updates.
And you have a schedule you do updates on?
It's kind of a rough schedule. I have weeks that, 1 week I'll do these machines at these offices. The next week I'll do this client in their offices. So I kind of rotate the weeks. So I have all week to do the updates. It's not a set schedule. Although I have started to experiment with the command line scheduler. But the problem is I have some applications that I can't update them a version. Like I've got some customers where they're using TeamViewer and their purchase product, they have to stay on, either version 8 or version 9. So I don't want 9i to automatically update those. So that's the one reason I don't. Because I have to go in and manually do those anyway, so I just do it all at the same time.
But 9i does third-party only. They're not managing Windows updates.
Correct.
So really, if you're using Max Focus, you really can't get rid of it because you have to. Max Focus is also doing the Windows updates as well.
Right, yeah. You're going to keep Max Focus for the Windows updates. You just don't approve what's going to conflict. For instance, if you want to do the, like Adobe Flash, it's probably the one that I know that every day I'm getting a couple of machines that failed installation in Max Focus. So I'm stopping the Adobe Flash updates in Max Focus. I'm only doing that through 9.8.
Okay, I see. So I'm still going to get billed for my Max Focus patch management. And I'll have, if I'm doing this, I'll have to get them both.
Yeah, you just want to find a way to get, to get your $50 back each month without going over the $100 limit, or 100 machine limit.
Right.
You could upsell them a server.
All right. Well, we did get an email that we can from Chris. Chris is the one who asked us about the horror stories about working in different states or different counties. So we asked if he had a example of a horror story to let us know, and he did let us know. So I will read that. This is from Chris. First, let me remind you that I live in Alabama, the state that does everything backwards.
Alabama.
I'm going to stop right there because I like Alabama. I go to Alabama all the time. I didn't realize they did things backwards, but okay.
Driving the opposite side of the road?
I was. That might explain a few things. Anyway. If you get caught working in a county without a business license in that county, you get hit with a fine. A lot of people who work in different counties drive. I don't know how to read today. A lot of people who work in different counties drive unmarked vans to not get caught. I'm not talking about electricians or plumbers, even though I am sure some do. So he says, I support a company that designs and installs high-end audio video setups across central Alabama. Their sales rep was at a home in the early stages of construction in a new subdivision being developed. He was just there giving an estimate on a project. When he left, there was a county official parked behind him. The official noticed his truck. He drives a wrap truck and said he has never seen him in the area. At this point, the sales rep let him know they
don't take kindly.
You're kind. At this point, the sales rep let him know they don't, and he is told he has to have on order.
Wow.
I'm not sure what he meant. He has to have a permit to work in the county. They weren't worried about it because they figured it would be some time before they had to install the system, and the installation guys drive an unmarked van. So I guess the companies who wrap vehicles in Alabama don't have much business, right? Okay. It's unmarked because this is not the first time they asked about a license. When time came for the installers to go out, this county official was in the area again and saw them working. He asked who they were, and of course they had no license to work in the county. They got a fine and had to leave the job site half finished. They lost the customer, and the county stopped all work in the house until every company that did any work on it was checked out. The people having the home built tried to sue them because of the mess it put everything in. So that is pretty bad. It's even between county and county.
That just doesn't seem like it's the year 2000.
I guess every county wants their share to be able to get a permit that you have to pay for.
Yeah, but every county official can go around and say, I don't recognize you, boy. That's a little scary.
I say I don't recognize you. Let me see your permit to check my permit.
You may get arrested. Let me see your permit. Oh, there it is.
I don't know if county officials, these county inspectors, can arrest you. But
I was thinking maybe it was a police officer.
Yeah, it's the town sheriff, tax collector, and site inspector.
So in this case, I mean, I really guess you have to go if it was personally me. I'm not sure what's involved with getting a permit, but I guess I would go get permits for all the surrounding counties
or move out of Alabama.
Yeah,
that may be the easiest thing.
Well, but here's the thing. I mean, I have a county license down here, but I mean, it's a tri-county area. I go back and forth between the three counties. Basically drive all over the state, and I don't think I've ever had to worry about that. Now, the one thing I am thinking that at some point in time, different counties charge different tax rates, and I know that at some point in time, they are going to start enforcing that to where if I bill a customer that's in a separate part of the state, and our tax rate is 6% here, and it's 6.5% in that county, I'm supposed to bill that extra 0.5 for them and report it. So in that sense, I can understand that these things are going to happen, but I can't imagine somebody whose job it is to go around and find unmarked vans. Of course, I guess you could just mark your van and, you know, mark it something that's not business related.
I'm trying to think of an example of what you can mark a van with no windows.
Just you know, put
free
put
hugs,
mystery machine on there, or love shack, or.
Well, here in Oregon, from county to county, we don't charge. There's no sales tax difference because there's no sales tax in Oregon.
We do have to keep track of all the different sales taxes. So if we're selling something to another parish, because Louisiana has parishes, not counties, we do have to keep track of all that to file the different taxes or to report that differently.
So how do you, I assume you're not using something like QuickBooks for your
accounting?
Peachtree. I like it. So Peachtree is similar to QuickBooks. So do you have different, so you actually have different tax codes?
Yeah, they can put different tax codes in there based on the client. And I'm not a Peachtree expert. I can install Peachtree. I can figure out why it's not working. I don't go into Peachtree. I'm not the one who, that's not my job.
I can plan a Peachtree.
I go in Peachtree and look up sales orders to make sure I'm sending to the client with the right thing we ordered. But I'm not the one using Peachtree. We have our office staff does that. Luckily, I don't want to learn that. But that is a horror story. So my suggestion would be to get a permit in each county.
Yeah.
At least the surrounding counties where you might do most of the work.
Right. The next county's over. I mean, and they're not that expensive. I mean, down here, I have two licenses. I think I pay $57 a year for one and $70 for the other. So if you do a lot of business in the next county, I mean, you know, if it's something like that, but I'm a little worried. We may get a email next week. It's $400.
Well, that price is less than 500 computers on 9i Pro. So,
and I would imagine it's more of a pain to keep track of all the paperwork than it is to pay the permit fee, because someone's got to keep track of those when it renews, when you have to go pay it.
Well, you get a little postcard every year. Just budget.
We have office staff for that, but I can see if you're one person.
But then your tax would have to have a copy in their vehicle at all times. So when they do get stopped by Bubba or Daryl or the other Daryl.
How many people understand that? Not really. I love that show, but how many people understand that?
We've lost 3 out of the 5 listeners of this podcast tonight alone.
If you got that reference, you probably are of a certain age, right?
Yeah.
And I just want to mention that we did get an email from Jason. I'm sorry, John Morgan, that says he laughed at Martin. So I'm going to assume, John, that you laughed at my jokes and not physically at me.
And I took it as he laughed at you.
Yeah, that's what I took it as.
What? Both of you, thanks, guys, for having my back.
I replied to him saying, well, I wanted to reply saying, I laugh at him all the time, too.
That makes two of us.
So Brad sent an email, too, said he laughed at Martin when everybody hurts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that's funny. He explained why he laughed at me. He didn't just say, I laughed at Martin. But hey, if I can bring listeners to the show to laugh at me, then hey, I've done my job.
He actually clarified that he laughed out loud. Well, so that was a definite LOL for the M-O.
LOL yes. For the, well done, LOL. Martin.
Thank you. That's an LOL in my corner.
All right.
Tepid show is going downhill.
Yeah, we've gone past torrid to the sultry portion of the show. We are almost scalding here. We've packed a lot in. So did we leave a stone unturned, gentlemen?
Oh, there's a couple, but I think
yeah, we can turn those over next week.
All right. So we want to thank everybody for listening and subscribing to the show. If you're subscribing, we do understand that there's still been a little technical difficulty with getting the shows correct in your podcaster. Some of you are getting old shows but not new shows. Some of you are getting new shows but not old shows. That will be fixed, but you can always go to the Podnuts Pro section on podnuts.com. It is working in iTunes, and if you're in iTunes, I don't know what the correct nomenclature is. Are you supposed to like us or something in the?
You can leave a review.
A review, yes. Leave
and,
a review.
And I think the only option is 5 stars. I think that's the only option available for what? This podcast.
Isn't, no, like 11. Oh, there's. I get it. Never, I'm gonna go back to my corner now.
Oh, that's what happens when you're only partially paying attention.
All right. So, last words before we sign off here, gentlemen.
Dwell, if you have any questions, feedback, comments, email us podnutspro@podnuts.com.
All right, Martin.
I don't have anything else to say.
Okay. And as is customary, as per usual, our weekly quote from Mr. Ben Franklin, well done is better than well said. Thank you all, and have a good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.